This message is a presentation of Pinnacle Baptist Church and the preaching ministry of Pastor Ray McBerry. Other messages like this are available online at pinnaclebaptist.com. The church is located at 2517 High Falls Road in Griffin, Georgia. If you're in the area, we would love for you to visit us this Sunday. Now, here's today's message.
All right, got us on back there. Well, tonight we're in Genesis chapter 27, so we're now past the halfway mark in the book of Genesis. And in Genesis chapter 27, it's going to be probably the story of Jacob and Esau that you remember the most, maybe even more than the bowl of pottage. But tonight we have the story of Jacob and Esau and the blessing from their father Isaac. So we'll dive right in here to verse number 1. It says, "And it came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau his eldest son and said unto him, My son. And he said unto him, Behold, here am I. And he said, Behold, now I am old. I know not the day of my death. Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver, and thy bow, and go out to the field and take me some venison, and make me savory meat, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die." So here is Isaac. He's an old man at this point. The Bible says his eyes were dim, so he couldn't see very well at this point. And he calls Esau in, his eldest son, and he says, I'm sure that my time is drawing nigh. I don't know how much time I have left. He said, so I want you to go out with your bow and arrow like you've done many times before. Go hunting, kill a deer, bring me the venison, and cook it up the way you know I like it. Now, this was kind of his request for a last meal with his son Esau. Now, we already know from what we've seen to this point in the book of Genesis that Jacob now owns the birthright. But the birthright is not the same as the blessing. Isaac says, go get me the venison, bring it to me, make me a meal that I may eat before I bless you. Recall, if you would, the discussion that we had about the difference between the birthright and the blessing. The birthright is what Esau sold for the mess of pottage when he came into the camp that day and he was famished, faint, and thought that he was about to die. But the blessing is something similar, but not the same. The birthright was the right of the elder son to inherit a double portion of the inheritance when the father passed away. So he would get twice as much as his brother would in this case, with there being just the two of them. The blessing, though, is tied directly to the Abrahamic covenant, the promises, the blessings that God gave to Abraham. Then Abraham passed it not to Ishmael, but to Isaac. And now Isaac is about to pass it on, and his intention, even though Jacob is to get the birthright, and there's no question about that because Esau traded it. It was a fair deal. It was not a wise deal on Esau's part, but it was a legitimate deal. So everybody in the family, including Isaac at this point, are acknowledging that Jacob is to get the birthright, but he still intends for his eldest son, Esau, to get the special blessing. That blessing that comes down through their family, that would be whoever gets the blessing is supposed to be the head of the family, the leader of the family from that point on. And whoever gets this blessing, it's going to be the one that gets that blessing that was part of the Abrahamic covenant, where God said, those that bless you, I'll bless. Those that curse you, I'll curse. And through you will all families of the earth be blessed. So in other words, the lineage that we regard as the lineage of the Messiah was going to come through whoever gets the blessing here. And they would also, of course, receive the blessings of God regarding being prosperous in this world as well. So the blessing is what is at stake here, and it is Isaac's intention to give that to Esau, even though he sold the birthright. He no longer has the birthright, but he's still Isaac's favorite of the two boys. And so he's still planning to give this blessing to Esau. It says here, verse 5, "And Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau his son. And Esau went to the field to hunt for venison and to bring it." So we don't know where she was standing, but she heard what Isaac told Esau to go do, to go into the field and get the venison and bring it back. "And Rebekah spake unto Jacob her son, saying, Behold, I heard thy father speak unto Esau thy brother, saying, Bring me venison and make me savory meat that I may eat, and bless thee before the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee." So at this point, Rebekah is the instigator of the treachery that's about to take place, the deception that's about to take place. It's the mother who is behind this. Jacob is going to go along with it, but it is clearly Rebekah that comes up with the plan. Verse 9, "Go now to the flock, and fetch me from thence two good kids of the goats, and I will make them savory meat for thy father, such as he loveth. And thou shalt bring it to thy father, that he may eat, and that he may bless thee before his death. And Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, Behold, Esau my brother is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. My father peradventure will fill me, and I shall seem to him as a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse upon me and not a blessing." Isn't it interesting that, first of all, Esau must have been one hairy fella if they can tell the difference between the two of them just by touching their skin. And we're about to see just how hairy he is. But the irony here, I think, is in the play on words. T.R. there in verse number 12, Jacob says, "My father peradventure will fill me, and I shall seem to him as a deceiver." Here's Jacob, whose name means deceiver, saying, "My father will view me as a deceiver." While being a deceiver, that's right. "And I shall bring a curse upon me and not a blessing." So his concern is that Isaac is going to realize what's going on, and he's not only not going to get the blessing, but his father's going to pronounce a curse upon him. Now, remember, we've already seen a father pronounce a curse upon someone previous in the book of Genesis. That was Noah, who pronounced the curse not upon his son Ham, but upon his grandson Canaan. And so we understand very well that both the blessings and the cursings were of the Lord in this family. And so Jacob says, "Listen, I don't want to get a curse. Not only do I want to not miss out on the blessing, but I sure don't want to get a curse." Verse 13, "His mother said unto him, Upon me be thy curse, my son. Only obey my voice and go fetch me them." She said, "If you get cursed, if your father pronounces a curse upon you, let it be on me." Now, I don't know that God would have acknowledged that, but that's what she's saying to Jacob. "And he went and fetched and brought them to his mother, and his mother made savory meat such as his father loved. And Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them upon Jacob, her younger son." Now, she's doing a couple of things here. First of all, she's going to take the two kids that he brings, young goats, and she's going to cook them up just like Esau would have cooked the venison, like his daddy liked it. She knew how their daddy liked the venison to be cooked, so she's going to cook the two kids, the two young goats, that'll be tender meat. She's going to cook it just the way the venison would have been cooked, so that Isaac hopefully won't be able to discern the difference with the meat. But then she says, she takes one of Esau's robes, some of his clothes that she has there in her tent. And, of course, the obvious reason for that is his clothes smelled like him. Just like Your clothes smell like you. Every person has a unique smell to them as well as a unique sound to them. And, you know, particularly with Esau being a woodsman, someone who is always outside, he's going to have a very distinct smell from Jacob, who was always around the camp. He wasn't the outdoorsy kind. You can't be in the outdoors without having that certain aroma of smelling like the earth a little bit, smelling like a campfire, the smoke getting in his clothes from being camping out. So his clothes undoubtedly had a very distinct smell to them as compared to Jacob's clothes. So his clothes would have smelled like him. Verse 16 says, "And she put the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands and upon the smooth of his neck." Now that is one hairy fellow where his skin must have felt like goat's fur, goat's hair. Not only are goats furry, but it's pretty coarse too. And she put it on the backs of his hands where his daddy might feel. And she put it on the smooth of his neck here where his dad might put his hand on his neck to pull him close to hug him or to pray with him. And she's using the skin of these two goat kids so that he will be tricked, deceived into thinking it's Esau. That's got to be one hairy fella to be tricked by the goat skins. It says, "And she gave the savory meat and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. And he came unto his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I. Who art thou, my son?" So he's expecting Esau, and he hears somebody come into his tent that says, "My father." But he says, "That doesn't sound like Esau. Who are you? Who is that?" "And Jacob said unto his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn." Now, is that a lie? That's a lie. Okay, that's a lie. "I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless me." So, Rebekah's the one that instigated this act, but clearly Jacob is going along with it. Jacob has now lied to his father. He's deceiving his father. There could be no question that Jacob is guilty. He is deceiving, attempting to deceive his father. Verse 20, "And Isaac said unto his son, How is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son?" That's a good question, isn't it? How'd you find the deer so quickly? I mean, you've not been gone very long, and you've already had time to come home, clean and dress it, and cook it. You haven't been gone for very long. How is it that you've come back so quickly? And he said, "Because the Lord thy God brought it to me." I guess of maybe the whole story and all the deception that's going on here on Jacob's part, the thing that maybe bothers me the most in the story is now he's invoking God and trying to bring God into the story. He says, "The Lord your God is the one that led me right to the deer and allowed me to find it so fast. That's why I got back so quickly and got it prepared so fast." So he's now bringing God into the story, into the deception. I'm sure the Lord didn't appreciate that either. "And Isaac said unto Jacob, Come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not." He said, "I'm still not sure. Come on over here and let me feel you." And Jacob went near unto Isaac his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." So Isaac says, "My ears deceive me because this sounds like Jacob, but you certainly feel like Esau." He obviously was feeling him to feel if he was hairy like Esau. And he is, at this point, he's believing what he feels with his hands instead of what his ears tell him. "And he discerned him not because his hands were hairy as his brother Esau's hands, so he blessed him." So Isaac is deceived. He's tricked. He says, well, you sound like Jacob, but, you know, I'm old. Maybe my hearing's going just like my eyesight is gone. He said, you definitely feel like Esau, so you must be Esau. So he blessed him. Isaac gave Jacob the blessing. Now, I know that, like we talked about before, many times when in Sunday school classes, when the story about the birthright and the bowl of pottage is told, Jacob is oftentimes described as stealing his brother's birthright. Jacob didn't steal the birthright. He traded it fair and square for the birthright, but we can't say that about the blessing. This is clearly deceitful on both Rebekah's part and Jacob's part. He has intentionally deceived his father, but now he has the blessing too. Let's read what the blessing is. Verse 24. And he said, art thou my very son Esau? And he said, I am. So once again, Isaac is asking him, just before the blessing, are you Esau? And once again, Jacob says, I am. So he's in it up to his eyeballs. He's lied again. Verse 25, and he said, bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's venison, that my soul may bless thee. And he brought it near to him, and he did eat. And he brought him wine, and he drank. And his father Isaac said unto him, come near now, and kiss me, my son. And he came near and kissed him. And he smelled the smell of his raiment, and blessed him, and said, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field which the Lord hath blessed. So he calls him to him to kiss him, but really one of the reasons he's calling him to him, he still hasn't pronounced the blessing yet. He's about to, but one of the reasons he calls him to kiss him is he wants to get some proof with his nose who this is. But again, because Rebekah has given Jacob one of Esau's garments to wear, he even smells like Esau. So he not only feels like him, but he smells like him as well. The end of verse 27, he said, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field which the Lord hath blessed. Therefore, God give thee of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. So here's the first part of the blessing. May God prosper you is what he's saying. May he give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, plenty of corn and wine. He's saying, may God prosper you. Verse 29. Let people serve thee and nations bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. So here in the blessing that Isaac gives to Jacob, we have, again, part of a reminder of the Abrahamic covenant. Those that bless you, may God bless them. Those that curse you, may God curse them. He asked, may God bless you and prosper you with the corn and the wine and the fatness of the earth. Then comes the part regarding other people. May nations serve you. And here's the real important part. May you rule over your brethren. He gave the blessing of being the head of the family to Jacob. The blessing that should have been Esau's as the elder of the two goes to Jacob. You say, well, preacher, he's given the blessing, but it was done deceitfully. Doesn't that mean he can undo it? I mean, according to law, even our law today, if a contract is made and there's a fiction there, there's a fraud there, the contract is considered null and void. So can't Isaac just void out the blessing and give a new blessing? Apparently, that's not the way that it worked. At least, that's not the way it worked as far as Isaac was concerned. Because Isaac's position, as we're about to see, is that once he's pronounced the blessing, whoever he gave the blessing to has the blessing. Look what it says in verse number 30. And it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was yet scarce gone out of the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from hunting. This is where, if you're watching this in the movie version of things, the plot thickens and it really begins to get interesting. No sooner is Jacob gone out of his daddy's tent than here comes Esau into the camp with the deer that he's killed. Verse 31, and he also made savory meat and brought it unto his father and said unto his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's venison that thy soul may bless me. So here's Esau. He's totally in the dark about everything that's gone on. He fixes the venison, brings it into his father and says, arise, eat, and then give me the blessing that you want to give me. Verse 32, and Isaac his father said unto him, who art thou? Esau must have thought that a strange question because his dad had just told him to go get venison and bring it to him so he could bless him. But his dad says, who art thou? And he said, I am thy son, thy firstborn Esau. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly. Can't you just see him? He realizes what's happened. Yes, he begins to tremor. He begins to tremble. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, who? Where is he that hath taken venison and brought it me? And I have eaten of all before thou camest and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed. Isaac says, listen, who is it that I gave the blessing to? Who is it that brought the venison to me before you got here and I've laid my hands on him and blessed him and he shall be blessed? Isaac says, I blessed him and he is the one who's going to get the blessing. Who was that? And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry and said unto his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. Don't you reckon Esau knew who it was that had gotten the blessing? Oh yeah, absolutely. He knew it was Jacob. Now Jacob has not only gotten the birthright, but he's also gotten the blessing as well. But Esau says what you would expect to say when Isaac says, and he will be blessed. Esau says the next logical thing, well, bless me too, Daddy. Give me a blessing too. And he said, verse 35, thy brother came with subtlety and hath taken away thy blessing. So Isaac is acknowledging the blessing was intended for Esau. Thy blessing. And he said, is not he rightly named Jacob? For he hath supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he hath taken away my blessing. And he said, hast thou not reserved a blessing for me? Notice what Esau says here. He said, is not he rightly named Jacob? What does the name Jacob mean? Deceiver. It's literally the word supplanter. And I did an interesting word study in preparing for tonight because I made an assumption and thought it might be true, and it is true. There is a lot we can learn from the etymology of words. The word etymology, it sounds a lot like entomology, but they're not the same. This one with the N in the front, entomology, that's the study of bugs. That's not what we're talking about. Etymology is what we're talking about. That's the study of words, where words come from, their origins, their root words, meanings. And so The etymology of the word supplanter is from sup and planter, two different words. This planter is the root word, and sup is the prefix. The word, the prefix sup means under. The word planter, it's the root word, actually means the sole of the foot. And I thought about that because we've all heard of the plantar fasciitis in the foot. It's that bundle of connective tissues on the sole of the foot between the heel and the rest of the foot. And so this is that bundle of connective tissues, and people sometimes get what's called plantar fasciitis, where there's an injury here and it's strained or pulled and it causes a lot of pain. But you see, the root word here is plantar with an AR at the end instead of an ER, but it's still the same root word. So again, remember when Jacob was being born, or as Esau was being born, Jacob, who was not yet born, but was the twin, yeah, he reached up and grabbed the heel of his brother who was going out, and that's when they named him the supplanter. He reached up and grabbed the heel of his brother as he was on the way out. And that word, it's a play on words, but it very adequately explains who Jacob is. Not only was he the baby that reached up and grabbed his brother by the heel under the sole of the foot, but he's also now what that word literally means. He is a supplanter. He is a deceiver. So he is now, he's true to his name. He's deceiving, supplanting his brother of something that was rightfully his brother's. But Esau isn't correct in everything that he says. He's not totally right, because Esau says, "For he hath supplanted me these two times." That is, he took something that rightfully belonged to me two times. First the birthright, and now the blessing. But as we've already discussed, the birthright, I don't think we can really say Jacob supplanted him. There was no deception there. Rather, what the Bible says about Esau is true, and that is that he despised his birthright. He did not appreciate it the way he should have appreciated it. Otherwise, he would not have sold it for the mess of pottage. So I think Esau has it a little wrong here, but in that moment, in the heat of the moment there, I think he probably is doing the same thing you or I would have done. He's throwing everything on to blame Jacob that he can think of. And so he's accusing Jacob of supplanting him two different times. First for the birthright, and now my blessing. He had taken away my blessing. And he said, "Hast thou not reserved a blessing for me?" Into verse 36. He says, listen, don't you still have at least some blessing for me? He understood at this point from Isaac's answer that Isaac was not going to rescind the blessing. If he could have, I don't know. Whether God would have viewed it as rescinding it or not, Isaac is not willing to do that at this point. I think Isaac is accepting that whatever has happened was God's will for it to happen, and he's not of a mind to try to undo the blessing he's given. So Esau says, realizing he's not going to get his daddy to undo the blessing he's already done, he asks, "Don't you still have a blessing for me?" Verse 37. "And Isaac answered and said unto Esau, Behold, I have made him thy lord, and all his brethren have I given to him for servants, and with corn and wine have I sustained him, and what shall I do now unto thee, my son?" He basically says, listen, I have given him pretty much everything in the blessing, including prosperity from God and including making him your lord. Now, lord in the sense of a vassal and a lord. He is over you now. He will become the head of this family, and you'll be under him just like you've been under me up to this point. He says, what else is there left for me to do for you, my son? Verse 38, and Esau said unto his father, hast thou but one blessing, my father? He's not giving up here. Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. So he's asking God to bless Esau also, make him prosperous as well. Verse 40, and by thy sword shalt thou live, and shalt serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. So a little bit of a mysterious way of wording things. But he says at the beginning of verse 40, you're going to live by the sword. Now, what does that mean for someone to live by the sword? Anybody? Violence. By violence. You're going to be a man who's going to, you're going to have to make your way in the world by constantly being willing to defend yourself or maybe even go on the offense to get by in this world. You're going to have to make your way through violence. What's that? Street sense, yeah. You're going to have some street smarts. That's a good way of putting it. Well, he says, by thy sword shalt thou live, and shalt serve thy brother. So, in a sense, T.R. is right there, because he's reminding him, you're going to have to serve your brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. He's saying, eventually there will come a point where you will be stronger and you won't have to serve him anymore. Now the reality is that Jacob is not going to, as we go through the book of Genesis, we'll see the relationship between these two. And you can see for yourself and decide for yourself whether Esau is forced by Jacob to follow him, to be under his rule. I think, quite honestly, this is more of a prophetic statement about the descendants of Esau and the descendants of Jacob than it is about Jacob and Esau. Again, we'll see the relationship between the two of them through the rest of the book of Genesis, but the descendants of Esau are what group of people in the Bible? The Edomites. And we've talked about them a little bit before. The Edomites are the ones that lived in what is today part of the country of Jordan. As you're looking at the map, and here's Israel, the Edomites would have been to the southeast of Israel. They would have been down here to the southeast of Israel. This is where the city of Petra is located, carved into the red sandstone cliffs in those narrow valleys. That's the land of the Edomites. There is going to be a time during which the Edomites are actually not weaker than the Israelites, like they were for much of their history. There are going to be at least a couple of times where the Edomites are stronger than the Israelites. You could argue that maybe they were, as the children of Israel later are coming back to the promised land. The Edomites are actually, though they're related to the Israelites, and they could have been friendly to the Israelites, they choose not to be. But then later on in Jesus' day, when the Romans have conquered the entire area, it's interesting that the Romans take one of the Edomite kings and put him in charge of the whole province of Judea, which encompassed the land of Israel and the land of Edom, and make the Edomite kings the rulers over the Jews that are living in the land during the time of Jesus and the apostles. The Herods that were the king of the the land of Judea during the Roman Empire at the birth of Christ, and that beheaded John the Baptist, and that were still around during the days of Paul, the Herods were Edomites. So this prophetically is going to come to pass beyond the Jacob and Esau time period in the future. That will certainly come to pass during the days of the Edomite kings, the Herods, if not before. Verse number 41. And Esau hated Jacob. That's a strong word, but I think it means exactly what it says. He hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then will I slay my brother Jacob." I don't think hate is an overstatement when he's planning to kill his brother. What Esau says is, listen, my dad's in his latter days. He's on his deathbed. I'm going to wait it out. But once my daddy is dead and gone, I'm going to kill Jacob. And I'll get what's rightfully mine. That's what Esau is saying here. So Jacob's got a little while daddy's still alive, but their daddy could die at any time. Verse 42. And these words of Esau, her elder son, were told to Rebekah. So apparently, even though he said it in his heart, Esau must have voiced it to somebody, whether it was the servants or his wives or someone there in the camp. Somebody else heard it, and the words were repeated to Rebekah. And she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said unto him, "Behold, thy brother Esau, as touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee." She said, listen, your brother's just biding his time, and as soon as your daddy is dead, he's coming to kill you. So, again, she's the one that instigated the deception, the stealing of the blessing. She's still on Jacob's side, and she's trying to make sure nothing happens to him. He's still her favorite, and so she's trying to protect him. She said, listen, your brother's going to kill you when your daddy is passed away. Verse 43. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Okay, this is the second time we've heard Rebekah say this to Jacob in this chapter. She is still plotting, scheming on Jacob's behalf. She says, arise, flee thou to Laban my brother, to Haran. Remember, that's back in Syria where she was from. Padanaram was the other name this place was called, but here it's called what we've seen it before, Haran. And tarry with him a few days until thy brother's fury turn away. She said, go stay with your uncle Laban, my brother, for a few days and let your brother cool down. Let him have a cooling off period. Verse 45, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him, then I will send and fetch thee from thence. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day? It's kind of interesting. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day? She certainly would be deprived of Jacob if Esau killed Jacob. But how would she be deprived of Esau? Well, perhaps she's referring to Isaac and Jacob, because Isaac would die, she'd be deprived of him, and then she'd be deprived of Jacob the same day if Esau went and killed him after their father died. But perhaps she also thought she would be deprived of Esau, and probably rightfully so. Perhaps she's thinking, you know, if Esau knows that I'm the one that was behind all this, that cooked the venison, cooked up the scheme, you know, he's gonna disown me as his mother too. Then she would have lost both of her sons. So I think that's more what she's talking about than Isaac and Jacob, but it could have been either one. But she encourages him to go stay with Uncle Laban until she sends for him again. Remember, this is several hundred miles away. This is not just right down the road. So it's going to take him a while to get there. And once he's there, she says, just stay there until I send for you. Now, she's not intending it to be a long time. She said a few days. She's obviously not wanting it to be long because she loves Jacob. She doesn't want to be away from him, but she wants him to be away long enough for Esau to cool down. Verse 46, and Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me? We could say some good and some bad about Rebekah here in this final verse of the chapter, I believe. She makes a very valid statement, a true statement. She says, listen, if Jacob marries some of the daughters of Heth, some of these people that are Canaanites living in the land, just like Esau had already gone and married the girls, what good's my life to me? She basically is saying, listen, Esau has already gone and married these worldly girls. We've only got one son left. Isaac, I don't want him to end up marrying one of these local girls like his brother has, one of these pagans, one of these worldly sorts. So in a sense, what she's saying is true, and perhaps we could argue for Rebekah that was why she was scheming to help Jacob, because at least he had not gone and married one of the Canaanite gals there in the land, and there was still hope for him to marry a good girl. So perhaps we could argue that on her behalf. But what she's also doing by going to Isaac and saying this, she's trying to get Isaac to give his blessing to Jacob to leave for a while. And of course, the purpose of him leaving would be to go find a wife among their kinfolk back in Syria, back in Haran, back in Padanaram, where Uncle Laban and the rest of that branch of the family still live. So she's trying to get Isaac's blessings on sending Jacob away, so Jacob will go, but she's also, I think, got a valid point maybe in why she protected Jacob and made sure he got the blessing, because she didn't want Esau getting the blessing. Not only was he not her favorite, but he's married into these worldly people around them. She didn't want the same for Jacob. She was hoping for better with Jacob. Well, that brings us to the end of chapter 27. Maybe you've seen a little more than you already knew about the story of the blessing and the deception involved there. We still don't have Jacob out of the camp yet. He and Esau are both still right there in the camp. So in the next chapter, we'll see how Jacob ends up being sent away and what the consequences are of that. The story between Jacob and Esau is not over by a long shot. There's a lot more interesting stuff between the two of them still left to be played out. But that's for another chapter and another evening. Any questions or comments tonight?
A couple of interesting things. Finally, if I'm thinking right about this, that the fall from grace out of the numerous just fell from the garden. Now, mankind had free will to think for himself there and do the nature of sin. And so I guess, of course, God knows what's going to happen before it happened.
Right.
But that's the reason that Esau didn't give his best, so he didn't please God with his gifts or offerings as his brother did. So he's been down the wrong path to begin with there.
Yes, sir. Uncle Milton, you know, what you're bringing up is that age-old discussion about the predestination and the providence of God. You know, in Romans chapter 8, the Bible says we're all predestined. We're predestined to be conformed to the image of His Son.
We have a choice at any point in time.
We have choices. God has made us free moral agents. We have the ability to choose in spite of what our Presbyterian friends believe. We have the ability to make decisions for ourselves. I think it all hinges on that other, the other part of Romans chapter 8. Before we are predestined to be conformed to the image of His Son, we have the foreknowledge of God. Those that He foreknew are predestined to be conformed to the image of His Son. God's foreknowledge comes before He predestines us to be like Jesus. And His foreknowledge comes before, that's why it's foreknowledge, but the His foreknowledge is not what I call causative. It doesn't make you make the choices you make, but God knows the choices you will make. That's right. So God, in this case, He knew the choices that Esau would make before the two boys were ever born. And I think that's why God chose Jacob before the two were ever born. He knew the choices Esau would make, and He knew the choices Jacob would make. And so based on what God knew and His omniscience, His all-knowing, God chose Jacob to get the blessing. But He didn't make Esau sell his birthright. He didn't make Esau marry those two worldly girls. He knew their choices, but He didn't cause them to make those choices. That's a very good point. And of course, we, our Presbyterian friends and our Primitive Baptist friends that are hyper-Calvinist, they're not ever going to agree with us on that. But I think that's the biblical position there. It's certainly the Baptist position. Yes, sir.
Great commitment, a great decision.
That's right. That's a good point. He's right at the point of death. The last thing he wants is to leave this family in turmoil without finalizing things, so you're right. And so once he gave the blessing to Jacob, he wasn't inclined to try to undo that and give it instead to Esau. I think he also felt like that was God's choice that it happened, and he wasn't willing to undo what had already happened. I think he saw it as God's providence, although there was deceit involved, and he pointed out that Jacob was deceitful. But even though he knew and pointed out that Jacob was deceitful, he didn't offer to undo it or attempt to undo it. He basically said, it is what it is, and it's already done. So that's a good point, though. He undoubtedly had a lot of stress and trying to make sure he left this world with everything in order before he left.
And he trusted God to work things out for
the right. I think that's the key. He, in the end, he just trusted the Lord that the Lord already knew this before it happened, and he was just going to trust God to take care of the outcome. I think that's really what it was all about. I think you're right.
Good
faith. Thank you, brother. I enjoyed it. Hope you did too. All right, anything else? TR, would you ask the Lord to dismiss us as we go our separate ways? Amen. All right, hope to see everybody that's able to Wednesday night. We'll be starting a brand new video on Wednesday night.